This is a Triple J podcast.
Are we all thinking about love the wrong way? Because when we talk about finding love, embracing love, generally it's romantic relationships that we're talking about. But how much is that fixation on finding or keeping the one stopping us from living the lives we actually want? Well, according to one author, a lot of women especially have been told to settle. But she's asking why. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with writer and podcast host Dee Salmon. Now, if you're a regular on this podcast, you're going to know Dee Salmon. Obviously, she's a presenter on Triple J, where she hosts The Hookup, a podcast on love, sex, dating and relationships. But separate to that, Dee has been busy writing a book because she says it's about time women started to question some of the advice that's being thrown at them.
The period of being single was always like a small little chapter, and it was like, you know, just wait, it'll happen to you one day, and, you know, try and keep yourself busy.
Dee says it's time to embrace being single, to reclaim dating, sex, and to start thinking a lot differently about love.
It's a dangerous place to be to make your romantic partner your absolutely everything.
In this chat, Dee opens up to me about some of her most traumatic times.
And I was so heartbroken. I was more hurt by that experience with him than I was about the idea that I might never walk again.
And she says she's talking about this in the hope of helping other women realise their lives are not defined by their relationship status. Look, we do speak about some heavy themes in here, sexual assault, trauma. But I'm sure it's a chat that's going to make you rethink your life experiences and your priorities. So here it is, my chat with Dee Salmon on her new book, It's Not Love, Actually. Dee Salmon, welcome to Hack.
Dave, thank you for having me. This feels so weird.
What a bizarre experience. As someone who's filled in so many times hosting Hack, you're like, oh, now I'm on the other side.
I know. It doesn't honestly get any easier. I've been doing a couple of interviews this week, and the whole time I keep sort of being like, tell me about your love life.
You
so
might.
When did you realise that?
This is such an interesting insight. Who did you write this book for? Like, apart from yourself, who do you want to be picking up this work?
I did write this book for my 17-year-old self. So when I was, you know, 17, 18, I had been single my whole entire life and I really struggled with that. I'd seen so many girls and women and people around me, you know, have boyfriends and have sex and date, and I felt like there was something wrong with me because I was like, what am I missing? Like, why is this something that seems to come so easily for people? And so I read so many dating guides, right? Like, I read like The Rules, and I read like He's Just Not Into You, and I read Textbook Romance by Zoe Foster Blake. But it always positioned men and finding a relationship as the goal, right? And the period of being single was always like a small little chapter, and it was like, you know, just wait, it'll happen to you one day, and, you know, try and keep yourself busy. And I just realized now in, you know, my 30s, how much that was really damaging to, one, the idea that I was already struggling with being single and thought that something was wrong with me and something was missing from my life because I didn't have a relationship. But yeah, also two, it kind of perpetuated this narrative that women are only whole or their life only begins in heterosexuality when they find a man. And so really I wanted to write a dating guide that hasn't been written yet that encourages women that actually no, like that's not true.
Yeah, I feel like it's inevitable, Dee, that this book is going to be responsible for a few breakups. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because people will be reflecting on their relationships, where they fit and if they're getting anything out of it for themselves. How do you feel about that, reading it and going, oh, maybe this isn't for me?
I low-key would love that, but only because, like, I'm not being like, oh, I want to break people up. Like, if reading about some of the things that I talk about in this book, like how to know if you're settling or, you know, some of the unequal division of, you know, domestic and mental and emotional labor that happens in relationships and heterosexuality, like if stuff in the book resonates with you and you make and it makes you realize, like, wow, I've actually been like not my full self, or I've actually been disrespected in my relationship, or I've not been treated really nicely, or I've been minimizing or shrinking myself, or, you know, my partner makes me feel like I'm too much. Like, if people take that away and it makes them reflect on maybe their relationship isn't as fulfilling as it should be for them, then, you know, I've done my job.
There's some really deep stuff that you get into in this book. How hard was that? Like unpacking some of the stuff, like you go back to when you were a 14-year-old kid. That's got to be tough.
Yeah. These are stories I've never told before, but I felt that.
Which is really surprising because you've told a lot of stories.
Exactly. Exactly. I've told a lot of stories on The Hookup, but no, I just wanted to walk the walk, right? I feel like for nearly 7 years now, I've been so privileged and so blessed to hear from so many young people around Australia sharing their most vulnerable moments and some of their deepest and darkest secrets. And I feel like that's been such an honor, but I feel like in order to kind of as well make other people feel seen in the experiences that I've gone through, I felt like it was really important that I added, you know, some of those really difficult and vulnerable moments in my life.
What's really interesting about this book is it's split into parts. So there's being single, there's dating, there's sex, there's relationships, and there's love. So it kind of feels like the intention is it's a bit of a manual for anyone, regardless of what stage of life they're in. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want it to be something that you come back to no matter what period of your life you're in and find solace or, you know, a bit of camaraderie or help or guidance in whatever it is that, whether it's you're single or, you know, you're in dating and you're a hookup culture or you're in a relationship or, yeah, you're, you know, in a really long-term relationship. There's something that I think and hope that everyone can get from the book.
I want to go back in time a little bit, Dee.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If we look at you growing up as a teenager, maybe you're 14, 15 years old, living in Western Australia, how different were you as a person? What kind of a person were you then?
I was someone who I think like a lot of teenagers was trying to figure out my place in the world, right? And so many of the girls I was friends with and like the guys in high school were hooking up and having sex. And it was kind of this culture that I felt a lot of pressure to be a part of, even though I didn't really want to. I cared so much about, you know, what people thought, and I cared so much about getting validation and attention from the guys in my year that, like, you know, I would go to these parties and I would drink, and I felt like there was something that I wasn't doing right if I wasn't kind of participating in that hookup culture. And like as the years went on, that kind of got worse, right? Like I talk about in the book how I was like the cool girl. Like I spent so much time, no matter what kind of guy I was like potentially like chasing or had a crush on or messaging or seeing, I would mold to that version of whatever they were. Like if they were a surfer, I was like the cool, chill, beachy babe on the beach. Like I would just sit there waiting for hours while they surfed and that was fine. And like, don't worry about, you know, what I wanted, my needs. And then, or if it was like the muso that was like, I talk about this guy who just played his album to me for 2 hours while I just sat there and listened. Like,
it's a lot of arseholes in this book, can I just say, who make cameos. The other one that wasn't the worst, but one that just stuck with me was the surfer who would cancel every plan you had when there was a good swell.
It was an easterly, that was the surfer muso was like my kryptonite. But or if it was like the guy who studied politics, I would go out and read all these books on politics. Like I just was always finding ways to come across as like chill and cool and whatever they wanted. And I would always be up for everything and never had any like needs and wants. Or don't get me wrong, I also identified as a feminist and I was like really strong and extroverted and I'd put myself out there a lot. But because I thought I was a feminist, I thought I was doing everything right.
Another like really sad thing to read was when you talk about sex in those early years and you kind of realize that a lot of those early experiences perhaps weren't consensual or there was some really horrible stuff that was happening. And there's a quote in the book where you say, we hook up, we get fingered, give head. And it felt like a checklist and our worth as women were tied to being how hot we were and how many guys wanted to F us. How do you reflect on those early days and the danger that you were in that maybe you didn't know at the time?
I had no idea that I was sexually assaulted or had been in my like late teens and early 20s until I started having these conversations probably in my early days of the hookup. Like it wasn't until...
Wow. So like it was a while.
It was a while, Dave. Like it really was a while, which makes it even more important around consent education and sex education, right? Like I've been in such a privileged position where I've been able to learn so much about this through my job. But the fact that like it took me until my like early mid-20s to realize that about experiences that I had gone through. And I just really wanted to make that point in the book with a lot of the, you know, kind of examples that I speak about, because I think for so many young women in particular as well, right, this is just what we've learned, been taught that, you know, sex is something that happens to women and it's something that men do, right? Like women are just kind of receivers of men's pleasure. And so, yeah, it was something that was pretty hard to write because I talk about it in the book as well. Like I was sexually assaulted at 14 and felt so much shame around that and then tried to like own it and be like, no, I wanted it to happen, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I spoke to my friend. We had like a conversation around sexual assault and she told me about this experience that she'd went through. And it was the exact, like we were both in that bed, like he had done what he'd done to me to her. And it was just such a horrific thing to hear your friend so rattled and hurt by that experience. But then also it was so validating at the same time.
Yeah, well, it wasn't until she used the words that you understood that they related to you.
Exactly. And seeing how much it had impacted her made me realize that the shame I tried to kind of push down and the hurt that I'd felt having experienced that was actually real and deserved to be, you know, spoken about.
Yeah. I want to get into some of the advice you've got in this book. You say in the book you don't believe in dating to find a partner. What do you mean by that?
I've just seen, and with my own experience as well, like I was saying, like I just was so desperate for a relationship and a partner in my early 20s and late teens that I just looked past so many red flags, right? And I just, no matter, it was like I had a blank space and I just wanted to fill it. It didn't matter if we had anything in common. It didn't matter if I actually liked them. It was more just I wanted a partner. And so I looked past so much stuff and didn't actually intentionally date. And I see this happen all the time with friends, like especially getting into my 30s, I've seen a lot of friends kind of go through that panic and realize like, okay, if I want to get married, if I want to have kids, if I want to build a family, like I'm going to have to find a partner. And it's almost like the first person that shows them any sort of attention that they're like, okay, I'm into this, and they rush through. And so, and this might not be the case for everyone, but from my experience, when you are dating, desperately trying to find a partner, you do put yourself in a position to look past some things, or maybe like lie to yourself about some things, or not actually be intentional with the people you're meeting and whether or not you actually like them. And so I think that when you try and reframe dating, which is what I tried to do when I came out of being boy sober, of just like, no, I'm completely content on my own. I really love my friendships and my life and my career. And I just want to date now to learn about myself, to learn about other people, to connect, to have, you know, safe and beautiful sex. And it's kind of then frames this experience as like getting to know people, right? Like you're actually being intentional when you're, and you're taking that time and effort to figure out, hey, is this person actually someone like that might be compatible in my life?
Dee, you do get into some really intense stuff in here and big moments in your life, particularly one when you were 18 and you got into a horrific car accident and you were very, very badly injured. You were with your boyfriend at the time. When you're talking about that event, you talk about how it taught you a lot about love. How pivotal was that moment?
So when I was in my late teens, and I was so desperate for a boyfriend, I finally got a boyfriend, right? And so I thought that it was my first love and I thought that this would be my person forever. Like I thought, you know, this is what people talk about. Like you get into a relationship and they're the one and you want to get married and they're your everything. And, you know, I thought that I would be his everything. And when we got into the car accident and I basically was told I might not ever walk again. And, you know, it was really intense and I was in emergency hospitals and I was, you know, in recovery and in hospital for months and then in a wheelchair for 6 months and then on a grandma frame for like a year and crutches. And it took 2 years all up to kind of recover. Like it was a really, really massive accident. And my expectation was because I had assumed like, yeah, your romantic partner is everything. And at that point, I had kind of made him everything. I had dropped out of uni. We were talking about moving in together. We'd only been together for 7 months. Like we were moving in together. Like I ditched my friends so often. I put him on this pedestal and made him the center of my universe. And after that accident, like he didn't really show up. Like, he wasn't there for me. I didn't see him for 6 weeks. He never really like called or texted me, and it was devastating. And I was so heartbroken. I was more hurt by that experience with him than I was about the idea that I might never walk again. And I think I genuinely thought that like it'd be us against the world and we would be stronger, and that didn't happen. And after, you know, months and months of like complete heartbreak and agony, I had to end that relationship because I just couldn't do it anymore. It was too painful. And then I realized so many of my friends showed up, and it was friends that maybe in relationships I hadn't nurtured because I'd been putting everything into this partner, and they showed up for me in so many incredible, beautiful ways. And so I talk about that in the book. Like, in this moment, I kind of realized like that's what love is, right? Like, that was love. And they were there for me every single day, whether it was one of my friends who came over every single day for a second dinner to eat with me and my family at the table, or friends who sat with me in hospital for hours on end, or friends who brought me like treats and princess crowns and did anything to make me feel normal again, and friends who took me out for walks in my wheelchairs. Like, it was just such a contrast, Dave, to what I had experienced and what I was experiencing with the boyfriend. And yeah, it was a really huge pivotal moment in my life where I realized like we have been prioritizing romantic love the wrong way. Like, we've put it on this pedestal and this hierarchy, and that is maybe something that works for some people. But I think in my current relationship, like, I absolutely love my partner. He's the best person ever. But my friends are just as important and just as loved and just as valuable. And that's something that I really do encourage. It's a dangerous place to be, to make your romantic partner you're absolutely everything, your best friend, your soulmate. We know that 41% of marriages end in divorce in Australia. Like, I just think the way that we've been taught to love, it's really set up a lot of us for failure.
That accident, did it change the way that you were living your life?
Yeah, it absolutely changed my life. It made me slow down a lot, and it made me realize like every day isn't a given. I just thought, I think it's that, you know, you graduate from high school, right? You have this like, the world is like my oyster, and like I can do everything and anything. And I thought I was going to go traveling to Europe and this and that. And like I had all these plans. And then you're kind of put in this position where someone says to you, like, you might never walk again. It really shifts entirely your perspective on life.
I think anyone who's been through a trauma like that, or even very different to that, can understand how it becomes a bit of a sliding doors moment, or just there's a lot of growth that can happen from something like that. I've got to talk about your current relationship, because you are in this high profile relationship right now, Dee, and you're with Collingwood captain Darcy Moore. You do reflect a little bit on parts of your relationship in the book, but you don't spend a huge amount of time on it. I'm wondering if that was intentional.
Absolutely.
Be hard, because there's so much interest, right? And people are constantly writing about you two and taking pictures of you. Were you worried that people would buy this book thinking, oh, it's a tell-all about my relationship with Darcy?
I really was. And it hasn't helped that I've done a few interviews recently where they've kind of centered him. And I'm like, this is completely not what I want the message to be at all. I do not want people to assume that this is a book of like how to get your Darcy Moore. It is not. And like I was saying at the beginning of this chat, Dave, like, this book is trying to be different from all the other dating guides that I read that was like how to get your dream man. Like, no, this book is, it's actually the opposite. It's about like, you might not actually ever end up with a male partner if that's what you're looking for. For so many people, that wanting of that partner just leaves you missing out on so many incredible relationships and moments in your life that are just as fulfilling. And so that's what I really wanted the book to come across as, and that's why I just was really cautious of not including too much of my partner. It's like, yes, I have a great partner, here's all the great things about him, this is what we work on, but that's not the point of this book.
Has being in a really high profile relationship changed your view on relationships at all? Like, is it a lot harder to maintain something when there's so much scrutiny, or do you think that you guys face the same issues that everyone else does?
That's such a great question. I think you're forced to have bigger conversations quicker. Making sure that you're maintaining your the privacy of your relationship as well has been so important for us. And so I think you just having a bit of that scrutiny and a bit of that spotlight has just brought us closer together, because it's made us have like these really big, important conversations about our relationship and how we want to protect it and parts of it that we want to keep private. And I think that might be something that not a lot of people will experience, having a bit of external pressure from, you know, whether it's like AFL media or whatever, has made us have like these really important conversations quite early on.
Even now that you are in a relationship, you still do a lot of stuff by yourself.
Like, I always thought like, oh yeah, like I can spend time on my own, like I can go be single and I'd go traveling and stuff, but I was never truly alone, right? And so COVID made me fall in love with myself. Like, I just relished in it. I relished in it. I loved it. I spent so much time journaling and reading and learning about myself and going to therapy. And I just loved it so much that I got to a place where I made it a non-negotiable that even though lockdowns were lifted, and thank God, that I would take myself once a year or a couple of times a year and just go on a bit of a solo alone time retreat, like whether that was camping for like a week by myself to reset and reflect and journal and spend some time being like, okay, where am I at? How am I feeling? I just find it so nurturing. And I talk about this in the book that like the longest relationship you'll ever have in your life is the relationship with yourself. And so why wouldn't you invest in that? And why wouldn't you want to nurture? I'm in a headspace, and then I've worked so hard to get to this headspace where I know that if my relationship, my romantic relationship, was to end, of course I would be devastated and heartbroken, but I know that I've got myself, and I know that I will be happy again, and I know that I will have just as a fulfilling and incredible life without him. And so obviously love him, but I'm like, I know I've got me, and I know me, and I know that I'll be okay.
Is it hard this last few years where there has been a lot of scrutiny, like in the book you talk about your favourite troll that you've ever received, the yeah. favourite insult, which is pretty full on. But how's that been to navigate?
It was definitely a bit overwhelming. I think it was just more just a bit shocking, right? Like, you know, Dave, like we work for Triple J, like the biggest troll we get is like, play more music. Like,
speak for yourself.
Yeah. No. Well, maybe you on Hack.
No, I'm kidding.
But you know what I mean? It's not to the extent that like,
when there's like tabloid articles.
Yeah.
About
like
you
Daily
and stuff.
Mail
yeah.
is just a whole different world. But I just think that I'm at a point now where like, I don't listen. I don't see it. I don't look at it. It's not something that really bothers me anymore. And like when they're funny, like the gonad stealing feminist witch, like when they're the funny ones, I'm like, if they make me laugh.
Gonad stealing feminist witch. So
I was like,
intense.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
I think it was in your bio at one
Absolutely,
stage, wasn't it?
Still is, doll.
One of the other beautiful things I loved was when you said, you know, over the course of changing and becoming the person who you are today, like some of the things that you tried to avoid like previously are now the things that you're most proud of about yourself, which is really lovely.
Oh, thank you, Dave. I know, I was always so scared of like guys thinking that I was like too much or, you know, too loud or too pushy or too difficult or whatever it was. And I remember like my best friend saying, like after my ex-boyfriend and I broke up, he hated the best parts of you. Like he really didn't like the parts that make you so special, whether it's an ex or someone else, like makes you feel bad about within yourself. Like there are people out there who will love you for those incredible parts or every part of yourself. So yeah, it's been a journey, Dave.
It's been a journey, and it's been a pleasure to, as someone who has known you for a few years, to get to know you a bit better. And if anyone out there wants to know Dee a little better, please pick up this book. It's not Love Actually. It's such a good read. Dee Salmon, author, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Dave. That was so nice.
So great to chat with Dee there about her new book, It's Not Love Actually, and to hear some insight into some of the defining moments of her life and what made her want to get all of this out on paper. Look, if you do want to hear more chats like this, remember to subscribe to our podcast right here, and you can go follow us on socials at Triple J Hack on Instagram and TikTok. You'll also see a bit of Dee there because we take bits of our interviews and we share them on socials as well. All right, that's all we've got time for. I'll catch you next time. Hack.